what you should call the Donna Sawyer, Jim Don, Henry S. Walker, and Rudy Dirk, the athletes.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is John Sawyer with Walcott Rivers Gates out of Virginia Beach, and it's my honor to represent Newport News Shipbuilding Employees Credit Union, commonly known as Bayport Credit Union. And if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your honors, I submit that I bring before you, this is another unlawful detainer case controlled by 801-126 of the Virginia Code. I submit that I bring before the court a case of clear error, and I think it demonstrates the, for lack of a better term, the mess that results as a result of the foreclosure process being brought into a statutory unlawful detainer proceeding. So this is the situation my client finds itself in. The foreclosure process occurred at the deed of the trustee's deed is recorded. Following that, as in every other case, and a summary summons for unlawful detainer is filed. What's the purpose of an unlawful detainer? Obviously, it's for to obtain possession, but really it's to prevent a breach of the peace. It's going back from the beginning of the Commonwealth that we are not going to be in a position where...
It's actually an unlawful entry, isn't it, Counsel?
It is, but with the idea that we're not going to breach the peace, that we want to go through the court system in order for, in a summary fashion, to cause the transfer, the orderly transfer of possession of real property. So that's where we find ourselves going into general district court. And I submit to this court, this case, the previous case, have very broad ramifications across the Commonwealth. Thousands of these cases run through the general district courts of this Commonwealth every year. They are, you can go into a general district court civil courtroom any day of the week and find a list of these on the docket. That's extremely long. And the idea that, you know, what the code contemplates, what the General Assembly contemplates, is that you present that trustee's deed that's been recorded. It is a record of the Commonwealth. It's, you know, I always have mine certified copy. It's the equivalent at that stage of a judgment. It's here it is. This is the deed that's submitted before the court. And if they have a reason, they being the defendant in the matter, has some basis for superior right of possession, be that a letter from the creditor saying, we grant you another 30 days, there's a recorded lease that was of record, and they've been
paying on it. Why can't their evidence of superior right not be that you put the wrong address on the notice? And I'm sorry, whatever the other factual dispute was in your case, why can't that be a defense?
Because I would submit to the court that that is a collateral attack on the deed, and it is a, well, to back up, those very issues were raised in this instance in a quiet title action, and that was before the circuit court appropriately, and it was non-suited, and I submit to the court that it was non-suited because this court has already ruled that these minor defects in the foreclosure process do not rise to an error that would be material. The standard of this court has been clear that substantial compliance with the foreclosure process is what's required. So if we're looking at 29 days instead of 30 for a notice period, substantial compliance standard is not going to overturn that. If in one spot in one advertisement the address for the property is 702 instead of 3702, but 3702 appears twice more in the body of that advertisement, plus the entire legal description, which this court has clearly ruled
if I could never raise any issue with regard to the piece of paper, why would the body of law on substantial compliance need to exist? I can't raise whether you complied, substantially complied. I can't.
But of course you can. You just can't do it in an unlawful detainer. You can do it in I'm looking at the advertisement. That's prior to foreclosure. Let me go ahead and get an injunction in here. This something's wrong. You're not meeting your requirement. I have noticed this problem before foreclosures ever occurred. That precedes the foreclosure. It precedes the transfer. Let me run in and enjoin that suit, or enjoin the foreclosure going forward. And I submit to you, if there was enough of an argument and a material issue there, that the creditor would go back and say, okay, we're going to go and fix that.
And you did.
And
didn't you refile?
There was one notice that was redone, but the decision was made, looking at the case law, that we would move forward with the foreclosure as it was, and that was subsequently challenged, but then non-suited, Your Honor. And then completely inappropriately, the very issue that was brought up in that complaint is then magically imported into the unlawful detainer that's been brought up on appeal. That's not equity. That's not appropriate. That's not Virginia civil procedure. The idea behind a summary judgment action, thousands of which are running through this Commonwealth's general district courts, are we need to quickly and orderly shift possession. We are not going to get into title. And what Your Honor is saying is leaving the exact problem that my client is confronted with. So let's go in to get in behind the foreclosure process in this action and say, I find that you didn't comply with 55-59.3 of the code.
I don't know, counsel, if to say my client may not have done something correctly which may have created a problem for me down the road should indicate that the court should move swiftly on an unlawful detainer action with regard to someone's home.
Well,
I don't know.
It's to me, it's mixing apples and oranges. The issue here to me is my client is the owner of this property of record. There is no challenge to that deed. Nothing is pending. My client owns it, but it can't possess it. It's not getting paid any rent. The mortgage isn't getting paid. The person in it doesn't have to pay the taxes. If there's an HOA, they don't have to pay anything.
Could it possess it if it redid the foreclosure procedure?
How can I foreclose myself? I own it.
Well,
that's the issue. The action, the unlawful detainer, the issue is...
I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just trying to figure out what would be the redo. Would your client... put it back in the newspaper, give them the necessary time period, and go back into court.
I don't think I have that ability, Your Honor, because I own it. Now, if you go and do exactly what is coming up here, which is trying title, then what the general district court judge would need the ability to do is say, I've looked behind your foreclosure process, and the foreclosure process ultimately results in that trustee's deed, and there's a problem with it. You need to go back and do it again. But they can't because they don't have the jurisdiction to set aside that deed. If the deed is set aside, absolutely. Now I'm going to go and foreclose again because I can correct the problem. My underlying deed of trust is still sitting there. But I don't have that situation anymore.
So the proper procedure should be the unlawful detainer does a tri-title, goes up de novo review by the circuit court, and if there is, in fact, a legitimate trying title issue, someone files a suit in circuit court in the original jurisdiction, quiet title or an injunction or something, and it all gets tried together, right?
Yes and no. I think what Your Honor was saying is correct, that in order to try the title, to bring up some defect, some material defect, and that's what it needs to be in the foreclosure process, in order to set this aside, then that needs to be a separate quiet title action or an injunction or something. But the case of In Re Cherokee Corp., which is actually a bankruptcy court case that involved Virginia law, is instructive on your Honor's issue on whether or not to combine these.
No, I wasn't saying that. I was saying that the de novo appeal of the unlawful detention just goes up simply on prima facie title, right to possession, goes up for de novo review. That's put on hold, and then the quiet title or the injunction suit is separately filed, and that can be resolved. And if the court does find, in fact, title needs to be vacated and injunctions need to be issued, they can do that. But the unlawful detainer action just doesn't have anything to do with any of that.
Yes, sir. I agree with that. My only concern is the filing of actions on the side that are going to try to go into the underlying foreclosure process that are designed to tie up possession. So in the interim, whoever is the owner of record whoever has that trustee's deed, whoever has whatever deed, the lease, whatever the case may be, the owner of record ought to be entitled to the bundle of sticks that go along with that, which would be ownership.
I would think the quiet title circuit judge would have the TRO authority to make a call on the fly to figure out who, what the equities are for that.
I would agree, and I would think that in that situation, then perhaps there is, the mortgage needs to be paid during that interim, escrowed into the court, something along those lines. The situation we find ourselves in now, Your Honor, is my client owns this property, has for years, and the appellee in this instance doesn't pay any rent, doesn't pay any mortgage, doesn't have to pay any taxes, doesn't have to do any maintenance. If somebody gets injured at that property, my client's listed as the owner.
Can you sell the property?
I can't. Who's going to buy it from me when I can't provide possession to them? Could I? I guess, but where am I going to come out with that? Is it going to be res judicata and say, hey, we've already looked at this trustee's deed and we didn't grant possession to you? Nice try coming back with the next person, but that's, or at least collateral estoppel.
So isn't that your best argument, that the remedies of unlawful detainer, the remedies from the district court up to the circuit court of de novo review, simply don't expand far enough to accomplish what land records need, which is certitude? Only a quiet title or an injunction proceeding could accomplish that.
I don't know if that's my best argument, Your Honor, but it certainly highlights the I think, legal and factual impossibility that my clients find themselves in, which is to be an owner of the property but not allow possession of it.
I'm not yet convinced that it's an impossibility. You ask, who do I foreclose? Myself. Foreclosure is indeed a matter of title. The issue here is, did you do the notice properly? Did you jump through all the hoops so that you can have good title, which would give you possession, to give you the right of possession? Circuit court found a couple of problems with your foreclosure. Why can't you go back and do the foreclosure again, naming the same party, and do it right this time?
I think that the deed has to be set aside in order for a new foreclosure to go. How do I foreclose on myself? I am the owner of record. Do I have to go back and invalidate or somehow void my own deed at that point? Am I now going to face a contest?
The judge has found that your deed has a significant problem.
But the court, the judge didn't have the ability to set it aside because that ability doesn't exist even with the circuit court in an unlawful detainer.
What about an unlawful detainer brought in the circuit court? Would the circuit court then have jurisdiction?
No, sir.
Why?
Because the statute controls. It doesn't try title. 801-126 has to do with possession. It does not have to do with trying time.
But if your possession is based upon a claim of title, why could not the circuit court say, I'm going to hear argument on that? Because in order to determine if your possession is rightful, I have to determine if your deed is proper. I know the general district court can't. Why can't the circuit court?
Under Your Honor's scenario, I'm the one bringing the unlawful detainer in circuit court. The defense is a collateral attack on my deed. What that needs to properly be brought is a quiet title action or some other action in order to set aside.
In order
deed.
For you as the plaintiff in circuit, and I'm presuming this is a hypothetical, that you've actually brought your unlawful detainer in circuit court. So we're not dealing with the exact facts in front of us. You've brought your unlawful detainer in circuit court. You are claiming possession. In order to make your case, you have to show why you have the right of possession.
And
your foundation is, I have a deed.
Yes, sir.
Okay. They attack your right of possession by saying you have a crumbling foundation because your deed itself has the following problems that occurred at the foreclosure. So therefore, you don't have the title that would allow you to come in on this unlawful detainer.
And I submit to Your Honor
it doesn't ultimately determine for all time the issues relating to the deed. It simply determines, can you get possession through the unlawful detainer?
I respectfully disagree. I think that is trying title. That's exactly what it is.
It concerns title.
What about that line of cases, counsel, that draws a distinction between trying title and evidence concerning the title? Corbett and Williamson and Douglas and Pennell, although I've heard that I'm misreading
it. The only reason to bring in evidence of the foreclosure, the only probative value of that, is to undercut that trustee's deed.
It's to determine whether you have the right of possession.
The deed gives me the right of possession. It's recorded. I don't know how else to say that, Your Honor. I see my time's up.
All right.
May it please the Court, I'm Henry McLaughlin. I represent the appellee, Mr. Bush. But quickly, I'd like to go to the fundamentals of this case because the decision of this Court is going to have a tremendous practical impact on what goes on in foreclosures and evictions. But before doing that, I'd like to just speak to a couple of technical things. In the reply brief in this case, and in oral argument, the appellate in this case raised the question of whether the court was correct in finding that there was significant material defects in the foreclosure. This was not in the assignment of error. We were not on notice of that in filing our appellee's brief, and I submit that is not before the court. But the fundamentals are, and I submit that the issue here is not the issue of collateral attack. It is a defense. And it really, a great amount of the practical issues here have to do with timing. Virginia is 99% non-judicial foreclosure state, in which a foreclosure can take place usually with 2 weeks advertisement in the newspaper, 14 days certified notice, which may be received 12 days, 13 days. Sometimes people are gone and off it. And then after that, an unlawful detainer, by statute, is entitled to priority on the docket. And if you go in and ask, and this has happened, there have been cases that the Jones District Court has stayed of the eviction pending a challenge in circuit court. But the problem with that is that the statute says that there's priority in unlawful detainer. So.
Right. So, counsel, the entire process you just outlined for us is controlled by statute and the contract already signed.
I'm sorry?
The entire process that you just outlined is controlled by the contract that the party signed and the statute. And you want this court to rewrite that by changing the way unlawful detainers work.
No, Your Honor. We're not asking. We can't do that, and we don't do that. We're asking this court to construe something that has never been decided by this court. And that is this issue, which has to do with the difference between concerning title and trying title. I think it may help for me to make this argument to go through what happens if you rule one way, what happens if you rule another way. And I'm certainly not looking for the court to rewrite anything, but to decide something that's not been decided. If you were to decide in our favor and in the favor of the parishes in this other case, the practical effect of that is that a foreclosing creditor, having foreclosed in a non-judicial way, with no judicial imprimatur at all, can go into general district court, present a trustee's deed with a prima facie case that it was valid. And the burden would be on the on the borrower to be able, and the homeowner, to overcome that and persuade the court that it was not a fair, as was done in this case before the circuit court. And even if that were done, and this would be done in a summary, quick way, so that if it isn't done, if the court is not persuaded, then the foreclosing creditor can get possession quickly. And if the general district court holds in favor of the foreclosing creditor, the borrower can appeal but must post a bond. The statute says up to 3 months. And then there's another statute that says that the foreclosing creditor on appeal can ask the circuit court to increase that bond. so that the foreclosure, and these are businesses, would be protected financially. And the borrower could only prevail if the homeowner could only prevail if the homeowner then proves to the satisfaction of the court that the foreclosure was invalid. Even if the borrower in what goes quickly persuades the court, overrides the presumption, the lender then, with the more extensive time that and the foreclosing creditor, with the more extensive time that's allowed with a with discovery and pleading practice, would have another bite at the apple, could file an ejectment in the circuit court, and could have done it to start with, but normally will not do that because they want to do it quickly for business reasons, perfectly appropriate, because 95%, 80%, I don't know what the percentage is, usually it is a valid foreclosure, and they're entitled to possession, and the defendant may well not contest it. And if they do contest it, don't have good grounds. So, but if the homeowner proves to the court, overrides the statutory presumption in the deed, then the creditor is not out of court. They are not gone. They can come back and file an ejectment. Now, counsel in this case was asked the question, if you came to the conclusion that you didn't do this correctly, and there's certainly an indication of that because it went back and re-advertised it after the foreclosure. And counsel said, well, he said, I don't have the ability to do that. I think, with all respect, he's mistaken about that. They could have at any point filed a rescission deed and go right, it could take no time at all, it can do it in 5 days, 3 days, and then file a new foreclosure. They could have done that. But in this case, and this is not the only case that this has happened, both sides chose initially to try this case before the jury. The plaintiff in this case did not file a summary judgment as they did in Parrish. Let this case go to trial. And only after the court struck the evidence, then came in and filed a motion for reconsideration. And, in fairness, the defendant did the same thing, non-suited the other case, and tried it in the eviction case. But if this court rules that it's a concerns title, and that taking into consideration hundreds of years of special considerations of rights of the home, having not ruled on this issue previously, if you rule that this concerns title and therefore the defendant can prove to the satisfaction of the court to override the presumption, that then leaving both sides the opportunity to adjudicate a final determination with the discovery, with the pleading practice, either through an ejectment by the foreclosing creditor, they would not be precluded. Statute's very clear, no res judicata. Also, the defendant can file for rescission, it can't file quiet title because this court's ruling Squire didn't pay off the mortgage, it would be for rescission. Either side could do that, or both sides could do that, and that would be decided. But if the defendant proved to the satisfaction of court that this was not properly done, there would be a stay. Now, that's what happens if that side prevails. If the other side prevails, what will happen is this. Most foreclosures continue to be done properly. So we're really talking about those foreclosures where there is a legitimate issue as to whether it was done correctly. In those cases, the homeowner would not be able to come into general district court or their lawyer and make any kind of good faith argument that against possession. It could be sanctioned if the defendant did. The only remedy that the defendant would have would be to go to circuit court and file a suit, and it would have to be for an injunction because the court you have an accelerated process in unlawful detainment. That is required. In a suit to try to rescind, you have motions practice, 21 days to answer. So in order to prevent actually being put out of the home, there would have to be an injunction. And the reason we put so much emphasis on this in our brief is that in the majority of these cases, that's not true in this particular case, but in the majority of cases, the foreclosing creditor is going to be able to remove that case to federal court. And the law is clear in federal court that there's an anti-injunction, and we've cited the cases to say that anti-injunction provision in federal court doesn't just apply to an eviction action, it applies to the lockout, which is the execution of the writ of possession. And so what you're going to have is a significant number, if there's a wrongful foreclosure, a significant number of homeowners put out, then suing to get back into their home. And this is why we've cited the long history of cases talking about the special rights of the home. We cited one case I particularly want to mention, is the Kemp case from the Fourth Circuit. In that case, the issue was that the forfeiture rules were being used to put people out of public housing on an affidavit of some sort of drug use, and then they'd have to come to court to get put back in. And the Supreme Court, the Fourth Circuit ruled that you couldn't do that. You had to first show that they should be put out, not have them put out, and then come back. The net effect of the other side winning these two cases would be that you're going to have a significant number of cases where people will be put out and then not be able to come back. And fairness to the court on the other side, I want to say, I think I should say, that in some cases, the homeowner will be able to avoid removal and the anti-injunction by suing the substitute trustee. And in the Squire case, you held that a substitute trustee can be held liable. But there are going to be a significant number of cases where that cannot be done in good faith, because if it's a fraud case, if you have a dual foreclosure process in which the borrower is being told, encouraged not to pay, put in your loan application, put in your modification application.
Counsel, may I interrupt you? Supposing I'm personally not able to come to grips with construing Virginia law against the backdrop of procedural requirements for federal removal and anti-injunction act, how would the ruling that you want us to give square to the statement that we do not try title in unlawful? Give meaning to that that I can understand.
Okay. If a court tried title, then it would, a trial of title would determine title. Clearly that just would not happen if SI prevails. There'd be no determination of title in a defense against unlawful detainment.
Wouldn't you be saying the mortgage holder did not properly foreclose and therefore does not have title?
No, because we've cited the statute that says that however an unlawful detainment, this quick process, however it comes out, it's not based to the judicata. The lender can come in, the foreclosing creditor has the absolute right to then file an ejectment action. And it could do that in this case.
So your point is that you do try title, it just doesn't have preclusive effect on the res judicata. But that's a little bit different from the common law that says, no, we're not trying title, period.
Well,
doesn't the question of title... I'm sorry, go ahead and answer.
I hope that this speaks to what you say. The Peniel case is very interesting about this, because the Peniel case says that possession is a form of title. So if you take that to mean that that is some kind of title, then of course at every unlawful detainer you try and title, because you are, beyond question, trying possession. The whole subject of title is a number of different bundles that go with it. What is clear is that a general district court cannot try title, and the fundamental reason is general district court can't set aside the deed. But if the general district court says, I'm not going to give you possession because I'm supposed to use equity, and I'm convinced, I'm persuaded, you didn't do this right, then if the foreclosure creditor says, I'm not satisfied with that, they can go to the second court, file an ejectment action, have a second bite at them.
And counsel, a court always has jurisdiction to determine if it has jurisdiction. Is that correct?
If they determine it correctly.
Okay. And so most unlawful detainer cases will not concern title. That's apparent from your argument. I think 95% of them.
Won't be contested.
Will not be contested. They will not concern title. A small number of them will concern title.
Yes.
And we have two of them in front of us today.
Yes, sir.
So the General District Court would have the jurisdiction to listen to the arguments to the point of saying, this unlawful detainer action legitimately concerns title. There are facts here that relate to the title, and if in fact you are correct, then this court doesn't have jurisdiction any longer. So the court would have jurisdiction in order to determine if it concerns title, and if it does, then it would either stay it or it could dismiss it without prejudice, and then the moving party would have other remedies in the circuit court. Is that the argument?
Yes, my time's expired.
No, you go right ahead and answer.
Yes, sir. And that is what we are asking for, is that the court could say, I'm dismissing this. It, by definition, would be without prejudice.
And under those circumstances, title hasn't been tried.
It has not been tried. In every case, it would be without prejudice because the statute makes that clear.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All rise.